Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, Executive Director of the NAMM Foundation, coming to you live from the NAMM show here on Friday in Anaheim, California. Thank you for joining us. This is Talking at Music Education, coming to you Facebook Live. Please let people know that we're available now on a Facebook Live event, but later we'll be up at Talking at Music Education, the podcast of the NAMM Foundation. So thank you for joining us. I'm here with Gina Chavez. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For joining us. Your first time at the NAMM show?
My first time at the NAMM show.
And a Gibson artist with a beautiful Gibson acoustical guitar waiting for you later in our chat. So first time at the NAMM show?
Yeah, I had no idea it was this big.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Austin, so we have South by Southwest. So I was thinking, it's probably like...
You have a few things going on in Austin.
It's like
that
South By, but like a little bigger. Yeah. No, it's like
so
20
you,
South Bys.
Did you get out there yesterday? Did you get on the show? Did you go out and see the show?
I did. No, I have a couple of friends who've been going to the show for a while. So they were kind of taking me around and seeing booths, meeting friends, all that kind of stuff.
So it's a bit legendary for you. But
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, I hope you make it, put it on your calendar and join us. You know, we love South by Southwest. We've been there for education conferences, but the NAMM show is kind of very unique and wonderful.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah. So I've had a great time reviewing some of your YouTubes. You've gotten some great honors in the South by Southwest in Austin. You did that very cool NPR Tiny Desk concert, and we're going to have our own version of that shortly. It's
going to
be cool.
Yes, we're going to.
But
who even cares about Tiny Desk?
Right, we're doing the we're doing a talking music education concert here. But you have a wonderful kind of message and energy that you're putting out there. And as I was reading all your wonderful things, one thing stood out is a great quote: "Passion meets the world's greatest need." Yeah, it's just really, thank you for that. Another little word for me to put on my wall at home. But how is this manifesting in your life as an artist? What's that journey? Passion meets the world's greatest need.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I heard that quote from somebody else. So that's definitely not my quote. But, I just feel like when we find something that we love doing and that brings joy to people or helps people kind of build a bridge, which is so needed today. That's really what I want to do with my music is, I perform under my own name because I feel like I kind of put myself out there on stage. I, talk about all areas of my life from, kind of discovering my Latin roots through music. I'm, I'm half Mexican, but I didn't really grow up speaking Spanish. And so that's kind of a bit how I've made my name with music is fusing, English and Spanish, taking different styles from Latin America. I've traveled a lot, even with the U.S. State Department, and been to, 12 different countries. And so I feel like I get to bring that on stage and kind of take people on a journey and also talk about how we're all the same. Like, I've been around the world and the things that make us different, the culture, the food, the clothing, the artwork, the way of doing life, like those things are different and varied and beautiful. But the things that are most important are just right here, is that we all want to be ourselves. We want to be loved. We want to be loved for who we are and be able to share that. And that's kind of the message that I want to give to people. And I want to look out on an audience that otherwise may not talk to each other because they look different. They don't speak the same language. They don't have the same amount of money in their pocket. They come from different zip codes. I want to see like an audience full of completely different people all having an experience and being like, oh, wow.
I feel something that's really the same.
Well, and like, we're all experiencing this together, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
that's what's important.
I want to talk about the State Department journey, and then also your time in El Salvador. That's seemed very formative for you. But always at Talking at Music Education, we have to talk about origin stories.
Yeah.
Where was music first available to you, learning music first available to you, your guitar playing, and how did that all start in your life?
So I've always loved to sing ever since I was a kid. And then I call it the pre-glee years before choir was cool. And so my mom, I think it was sixth grade, I couldn't get into art class because art's always been cool, right? And I was not good at art, but loved art. Anyway, my mom was like, why don't you get into choir? You love singing. And I was like, oh, choir's for nerds, you know. And so I ended up
getting... And now nerds are cool,
yeah,
right?
Now nerds are cool. So right. It's all come full circle.
Yeah.
So I get into choir and pretty immediately realized, I was like, oh, I'm actually pretty good at this, you know. And I loved it, right? And so I actually had really great arts programs. So I went to my high school and is now a fine arts academy.
Is it McClellan?
McCallum.
McCallum.
Yeah, McCallum High School.
We've been to McCallum.
Cool.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It's collegiate level quality.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I was a junior when they started the academy. So I didn't technically graduate from the academy just because it mm-hmm. had just begun. But the reason it became an academy was because it always had a history of such great arts. And I went to Lamar Middle School, which was the feeder to
as
McCallum.
Does Austin ISD. I mean, the Austin Public School District has really have a serious commitment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, that's great.
So I had great arts programs. And I think I was able to hone this instrument, you know, in a way that maybe other people wouldn't have. We did show choir competitions, you know, so we would do a lot of movement and dance. I did UIL, but honestly, I loved the show choir. UIL is like the sight reading music.
Like the and, serious ensemble.
Yeah, it's the serious stuff.
Serious,
I was not
right,
about that.
Where musicians go.
I did it, but
to live or die.
So anyway, so right. I did that piece, but I loved the show choirs. I really got to kind of, you know, hone my voice. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 18, I saw Toni Price is an Austin kind of legend, and she doesn't play guitar, but she has two guitar players that play with her. And although I grew up in Austin, I really didn't grow up being part of the music scene until I was of age and in college and started to get into songwriting and stuff. But anyway, I saw Toni Price at the Continental Club, and for some reason I went home and thought, I want to do that, but I don't want to like wait for somebody to accompany me. So I'm just going to play guitar. And so my dad, I was like, hey, dad, don't you have a guitar in the closet? That he would pull out, I don't know, every 6 years and play one song or something. But I loved it. And mm-hmm. I always remembered those moments.
Yeah.
And so it turns out he had a 1954 Martin in
oh,
the closet.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
He had gold in the closet.
Yeah. So I basically took it out, started learning. He taught me how to Travis pick and play Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan, which is why he even had a guitar in the first place. And then I basically stole it from him and I was like, this is mine now. And I started writing my own songs because I was too lazy to learn other people's songs.
Yeah, well, you had something to say too, right?
Oh, maybe that's what it is. I've
that's
always thought
what
I was just too lazy.
No, let's look at it for
like
what
that.
It is, right?
Like
yeah.
This.
So do you still have that Martin?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, that's an instrument you never
yeah,
would
it's
never
pretty,
move.
It's pretty beat up. If it were in mint condition, it would be like, you know, worth a pretty penny, but
yeah. But Martin can help you with it.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Well, it's cool though. It's like it's got stories all over
yeah.
it, and it's a beautiful instrument.
That's the beauty of a instrument that's got legacy in it and
yeah.
came out of a closet somewhere.
Yeah.
And, well, that's great. So, and along the way, were there really standout music teachers? I mean, do you remember? You know, I mean that they create a nurturing environment and bring people. Was that you
yeah.
know where they?
You know, I think I definitely credit my parents with just supporting music. You know, that was the one thing. I think I was one of those kids that tried a bunch of stuff and they weren't always like gonna go to everything. Just, you know, like for instance, I played soccer for like a season and my mom was like, I'm not gonna go like sit out at 7 a.m. when it's raining.
Right. I'm not
just
buying
so you can,
a
like,
van.
Try
I'm not
this soccer thing.
I'm not buying a van
yeah.
to take the soccer team down the street. Right?
Yeah. So yeah. she was kind of like, oh, but she was at every choir event that I ever had. You know, she made sure that was kind of where my heart was. So, mm-hmm. So my parents really supported it and never gave me the, oh, arts are, you know, not a real job or anything like that. And secretly, my mom apparently always wanted me to be the leader of a band, which I didn't know until I became the leader of a band, and she told me that.
Oh, isn't that something?
Maybe she like mojoed it.
Isn't that amazing, though, really? I mean, it was like her secret passion for you?
And yeah,
It was your end up being your passion?
She manifested it for me.
I guess.
You know, but my teachers, I will say, in school, I went to public schools.
Yeah.
I didn't ever take private lessons or anything. And so I had really good public school teachers. And actually, they were married. So Mr. and Mrs. Raymond. Mrs. Raymond was the middle school choir teacher, and Mr. Raymond was the high school choir teacher. And so there was a lot of synergy between doing things in middle school. And we got to know the high school teacher and kind of how they worked. And so it, you know, feeding into the high school program was great.
Well, you know, we call that, you know, a sequential curriculum. right? And it nurtures someone along so they feel really strong about what they can do by the end of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's, are they still in Austin? Do you ever see them? Or?
They are still in Austin. And I actually, I haven't seen, you know, especially Mr. Raymond, I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah.
But he's on my first album, he was one of my dedications.
Isn't that great? Yeah. You know, I mean, our podcast is called Talking at Music Education for a reason. You know, all the artists that we speak to, we want to know that origin story and also know that there is likely almost always somebody there that at least, you know, was part of that step up.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've once again described that in a public school setting, there was a place where this could be expressed. And this is what we want for every kid.
Yeah, totally.
Right? We want, and you know, the, you also expressed that there was a step up continuum and there's lots of options, show choir, serious choir, you know?
Well, and we
want this for every kid, you know? It's really important.
And I remember being in middle school and we so looked up to the high school choir. And because there was this connection and we got to kind of be part of the high school choir because we'd go to their performances or Mr. Raymond would come to our class, you know, like we were kind of in training to go to the high school choir. And that was really important. It was important to have a goal and see yourself being somewhere in a few years.
That's terrific. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of, we went to Austin with the Lennon Bus. We did a community forum there. We work very closely with the Texas Music Education Association.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, Texas is a really powerful music state. So tell us about the State Department. How did you get hooked up with, quote unquote, the big bad government, right? And what did you do? What was your role there? Were you an artist ambassador and what part of that program?
We applied for the American Music Abroad program, which I would describe as kind of the standard bearer of music programs that are funded by the State Department. And so essentially you're a cultural ambassador. Mm-hmm. And what we did there was, you know, anytime we would go to a different country, we do free public performances, but during the day we would do workshops for kids. You know, we'd go to, you know, a nursing home. We would go teach music to kids at a music institute. We would, you know, any number of things, right? Every embassy has kind of partners that they're trying to work with in the local community. And so it's about kind of working with those partners. And might, you know, they might pick a group like myself because they want to talk about, you know, issues surrounding women.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's a lot of crime against the LGBTQ community or whatever, right?
Right.
And so they would... That was part of our piece during the day. And then at night we would do free public concerts. But how we got into it, we essentially applied for the American Music Abroad program.
You just went online, you went to Google, you Googled it. And
you
said,
know, yeah. I heard about it through a couple people.
Okay.
It was one of those things where I heard about it from somebody and a week later I heard about it again. And I was like,
I think I need to pay attention. Right.
So we applied and honestly got in the first year, which is kind of unheard of because they get 400 applications and pick about 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so we applied with a trio and went to Latin America. So we did a 30-day tour in 5 different countries in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And we did so well through that program that then I would just receive random invitations from other embassies around the world who all need American artists to come over and share American culture, right?
And create bridges.
Yeah, exactly. And it's literally
connections.
It's nothing about politics.
Right. That's I know the program quite well.
Yeah.
And it's thrilling to know that you were part of that.
Part of your tax dollars are going to great programming.
But you know, the meaning of it is so significant. The fact that we're sending our best, our youngest, our brightest, our, you know, energetic artists that are going out and just interacting with community.
Yeah.
As artists.
Well, and so that's,
I mean, it's the bridge building that we all believe so strongly in.
The history of the American Music Abroad program, if you ever heard of the Jazz Ambassadors.
Oh, yes.
So that
goes way back.
So American Music Abroad is the Jazz Ambassador program of today.
Yeah.
It's of the same lineage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Dizzy Gillespie and Louis Armstrong were the first kind of American Music Abroad ambassadors through that program. And then they stopped it for a number of years and they noticed a difference around the world that there wasn't this cultural connection, bridge building happening. And so then they restarted the program.
Yeah. That's terrific. You know, we're so proud of here at the NAMM Show. We have 127 countries here at the NAMM Show.
Oh, cool.
And I was walking through the halls this morning of our breakfast session, and I lost count at about 6 how many languages I was hearing. So yeah, music as a bridge builder, as a connector, creating a community, it's undeniable. But you also had a life-changing experience going and teaching in El Salvador. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So in 2008, my now wife, my girlfriend at the time, she was in LA doing some mission work and working on like Skid Row. And so she was coming back to Austin. I had just lost my job because it's right about the time the economy was tanking. And we had a friend reach out to us who was doing a mission project in Honduras. And she was like, hey, Gina, I'm playing your music for all of my girls that I'm teaching and they love you. You should come down and do a concert. Ha ha. And I was like, huh. I was like, I've always wanted to do long-term mission work. Like, maybe this is a good time. I don't have a job. She doesn't have a job. The economy is tanking. Like, let's get out of here. So, you know, so we applied for this program. It's a Catholic volunteer program. My wife and I are both practicing Catholics. We met at the University Catholic Center. That's another story. Anyway, so we basically just said we want to go somewhere Spanish speaking. And so they sent us to El Salvador and we were there for 8 months. We taught English to girls in an all girls Catholic school. We lived with nuns. And we lived in the heart of, in Soyapango, which is essentially the home of La Mara Sablatrucha or the MS-13 gang.
Oh, that's scaring everybody.
Piece that was actually kind of, I don't know if it's serendipitous, but when I was in college, I was really affected. I met a photojournalism, I was a journalism major at UT, University of Texas at Austin. And there was a photojournalism professor that really impacted me with her work because essentially she documented the deportation of U.S. gang culture to Central America. So the reason there are gangs in Central America is because the U.S. deported gang members to Central America, which was war-torn from years of political strife in the 80s. And so it was a wonderful place for violence and corruption to thrive. Yes. Right, and so we are now seeing the results of all that.
Right. And the circle continues. Yeah.
So anyway, so I knew about this going down there and, you know, so we were in, you know, kind of the heart of gang territory, but we were very safe and we, you know, made sure to be very smart. We were also living essentially in like a compound. And honestly, it was like the most incredible experience of my life. Hmm. The people there are amazing. The country is beautiful. And it's so sad to me that the only thing we know about El Salvador is violence and corruption and gangs and death and drugs. And you know what I mean? Because it's so much more than that. And we were literally in the heart of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And what we came away with was nothing but
real people.
Know,
what you came people. Away with, real people.
Exactly.
With real hearts.
Exactly.
And real goals for their lives. And which includes safety and security. And
well, and the fact that that's the reality that they live in, that these mm-hmm. young women, so we would leave, we worked in a Catholic, so just picture yourself walking outside of a private Catholic school here in, you know, Anaheim or wherever you live, and outside of the walls, you see a chalk drawing of somebody that had been murdered 20 feet from your door. Mm-hmm. Like that's mm-hmm. their reality. Mm-hmm. So it is, I mean, it's real, but these are just like, it's like the most amazing people you've ever met. And then they're dealing with like the worst crime that you've probably never imagined.
So did you make music while you were there? Did you write?
I wrote a little bit, not a whole lot. Of course, once the girls figured out I was a singer, I would literally get into the classroom to teach them and they'd be like, que cante, que cante. They would be like, you know, like sing, sing, sing. And I'd be like, I'm not singing. We're doing work.
Right. Oh, that's great.
But then we would have like big, they had pep rally or like, what I guess what we would call a pep rally. So 800 girls in an auditorium or a gym celebrating like El Dia del Niño, like the Day of the Kid or whatever. There were all these like weird festivals and holidays all the time. Right. And so anyway, so I would play and, you know, we would do dances with the teachers and all kinds of stuff.
So it was building on your State Department experiences, right? I mean, then you went and had this deep, deep dive. And then,
well, that was before.
That was
a long time ago. So we did El Salvador, and then it's only recently that we've done the State Department stuff and gotten to go to places like Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, and Saudi Arabia, Jordan.
But the connective kind of energy of music just was really, you've really manifested that in a lot of places in your life, right?
Yeah, and I feel like I like to be kind of a sponge, and there's so many different parts of other people's, like I like to pick up parts of other people's cultural expression through music mm-hmm. and try to fuse that into my music a little bit mm-hmm. to almost bring it back to an audience that, you know, may not be able to travel to.
Well, you've kind of, you're making it that way too. I mean, you're really being known for that now. It's this great kind of fusion thing, if that's the right word. I mean, we have it in food. Why shouldn't we have it in music, right?
Dale.
Right? So here at the NAMM show, we have a big crop of college music students that are here, kids that are studying music formally in school. They're learning to be teachers. They're very aspirational about their lives. You know, wouldn't it be great to be in college again?
I know.
you know, but from where you are in your development and your career and your aspirations, what would you say to, if you were, have 2,500 of them in front of us? That's how many are here about. I think a few more, actually. What's some words of wisdom to share with the aspiring college-age music student, be it they might be going into the creative side, which is songwriting and developing, you know, following an audience, or maybe they're interested in production technology. Mm-hmm. What, from where you sit now, what do you know to share?
You know, I think the main thing is just to follow your curiosity. There's actually a really good book by Elizabeth Gilbert. She's the one that wrote E Pray Love, but she has one that's specifically about creative living, and it's called Big Magic. It's a great book, but she talks about kind of letting your curiosity be your guide. You know, and I can think back so many times that I was really curious about something, but then I like thought myself out of action.
Because of fear or obstacles or...
Yeah, I mean,
That's a whole other version of psychology, right? Yeah. That's like, yeah.
But part of it is like, just don't... If you don't even... I mean, sure, it's good to dive into like, why are you thinking yourself out of something? But on some level, it's like, if you just don't even give that energy and you just say, I don't know why I'm interested in this, but I'm interested in it, so I'm going to go do it.
That's the strongest...
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Why I'm interested in body dance music.
Stop dancing and just, you know, stop analyzing and just go do it.
Right.
Stay on that path of curiosity.
Just, yeah, you're curious, do. You're curious, do. You're curious, do. And it's something that I really wish I would have done. But I also feel like I've kind of reached a point where I am doing that. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, it would not leave you alone.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of these great kids and, you know, over the years, certainly when we're here, but, you know, I said, well, what do you really want to do? What's motivating you in the morning? What's the first thing you think of? What's the last thing you think of? What are you kind of dreaming about?
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, and I think that's part of it. I know for me, especially being at a place in my career where, you know, I'm married, I'm touring a lot. And so I'm thinking a lot more strategically about what I say yes to and what I say no to, because time is important. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Oh to Be Young Again, it's kind of not as much of a factor.
Right.
And, you know, I think that that's one thing that plagued me is like, I feel like I had to know, like, what am I doing? Like in the broader sense of like, what's my life's work? What's my vision, my goal? And that's kind of what I'm saying is that's great if you already know what that is. But even if you don't, just follow your curiosity. What happens is you follow this one thing and then it leads you to this one thing and then it leads you over here. And, you know, by the end of the day, you're like, there was no straight, like you wouldn't have gotten here on a straight path. You got here on this crazy wild journey, and the journey is what made the destination. Like, it's so cheesy, but it's so true. Like, it's not about where you go. It's about how you get there.
Right.
And I know it's just
Well, I
so
think
cheesy.
We just have another Gina-ism here. Curiosity do. Curiosity do. I really like that.
I need that on my wall.
Because I'm at a different point in my life, and you know, I have to, again, you kind of compartmentalize. There's certain things we got to do, right? When we're adults, right? There's just, we got to be attentive to it. But then it's like every day I have that curiosity. You know, and it's
like, and there's so many reasons not to do it, right? Because you're like, oh, but I have to do this thing.
Because you go back to compartmentalize the stuff
that bills,
you've got to do, and you know, then you need to streamline the do, so you can do the go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
curiosity go.
Yeah,
and I think as we get older, and I'm getting older on that side, is like you really want to do the go. You want to do the curiosity go because you feel the limit of time and you feel the limit of energy and. Well, you don't feel those limitations. You just have more desire.
Yeah.
So no one wants to hear about what I'm going through. We want
sure
to hear what
do.
You're going through.
But that's the other piece.
It's
so cool, like meeting people and sharing
process.
Experience.
It's this process. So let's get down to brass tacks a little bit. How many gigs do you do a year? What's your band like? What are you working on now? How many you know, albums out there? Just give us some brass tacks. Where do we find you? Give us some brass tacks.
Sure. So GinaChavez.com has all the things. I'm everywhere. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Spotify, whatever it is. Wherever you experience music, I'm there. The music that I play is definitely fusion. It's, you know, I kind of say Latin pop, but, you know, we'll do anything. My latest record is almost more of an R&B soul vibe.
Oh, cool.
You know,
got my attention.
My record before that was, you know, bilingual. Mm-hmm. Some of the songs are bilingual. It might be a cumbia, but it's in English and Spanish. It might be a bossa nova. It might be, you know, kind of a reggaeton, but it's in English or, you know, whatever. So we kind of run the gamut. But we definitely take audiences on a journey. We're playing a lot these days. I actually have my booking agent is in the room. Shout out to Larry Cawson. He's definitely keeping us busy on the road. We're headed all the places. We're going to be back here, not in Anaheim, but we'll be in, you know, Torrance and Escondido in California.
Great.
We're headed to Florida, all the places. So
great.
We're on tour right now. And I have a 5-piece band that I tour with. It's very fun.
So you're playing big venues, medium venues, theaters, clubs?
We're playing a lot of theaters, performing arts centers. We play at colleges. We also play, you know, kind of bars and music venues. Yeah. We do well anywhere. You know, I love playing house concerts or, you know, if we play in a church. So I love kind of being able to mix it up and really meet people where they are.
Mm-hmm. And how much time do you spend writing music?
You know, not as much as I should.
Yeah. And you probably want to, right?
Yeah. No, it's, you know, what's interesting is I've never been the kind of person that, real talk, like, has never wanted to practice. I hate, you know, it's like, I love performing. I love being in front of an audience, even if it's of one. But the me alone in my room part, writing or whatever, is the hardest part for me. And I'm now, I feel like I'm at an age where I actually want to be at home and work on my craft, which is totally new for me. That's never been something that has driven me as a musician. And so anyway, so I'm kind of, I feel like I've reached a new point in my career where, you know, I do want to sit down and actually just work on guitar. I started playing piano a little bit. I, you know, just kind of working with new, again, following my curiosity.
So we have another flip chart here of curiosity go.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. And the curiosity go is taking you to a more interior place.
Yeah, right? Totally.
And who knows what will come from that.
There
right?
you go. So...
Well, that's really great. Well, speaking of which, can we hear a little bit?
Yeah.
Is this the time?
Let's do a thing.
Yeah. What are you going to play for us?
So I'll play a song. This one's called Miles de Mías. It's definitely a fan favorite. It, you know, kind of showcases that Latin fusion. So it's a cumbia, but it's in English and Spanish. Miles de Mías means thousands of miles. And it was actually, I wrote it when my wife was, again, my girlfriend at the time, was in LA and I was in Austin and she was thousands of miles away. And, you know, long distance relationships are good and hard. All right. And thank you all so much for tuning in and for viewing and for having me here at NAMM.
I need to know you're closer than 2,000 miles. So the tips of my fingers miss the curve of your smile. Those dimples make me melt inside. But you, my love, are to find. I'm walking the block in a stupor of rage, and I got no more to give than what I've given today. I need someone to steal my mind, but you, my love, are to find. Yeah, you are to find. Te quiero, me pierdo. Si tú no estás aquí, te extraño, me engaño. Para aguantar otro día más, te añoro, te espero. Miles de vías desgasta mi amor. Vuelve, amor. It's colder without around me. I'm frozen, devout, waiting on bended knee. Your name ignites this heart of mine. But you, my love, are to find. Yeah, you are hard to find. Te quiero, me pierdo. Oh, tú no estás aquí. Te extraño, me engaño. Para aguantar otro día más, te añoro, te espero. Miles de días desgastan mi amor. Vuelve, amor. Tú tienes mi sed. Tú tienes mi sed. Tú tienes mi vida. Tienes mi alma, amor mío, vuelve, oh, te quiero, me pierdo. Si tú no estás aquí, te extraño, me engaño. Para aguantar otro día más, te añoro, te espero. Miles de días desgasta mi amor, te quiero, me pierdo. Si tú no estás aquí, extraño, me engaño. Para aguantar otro día más, te añoro, te espero. Miles de días desgasta mi amor. Vuelve, amor.
Fantastic. And the room is erupting, our little room, little tiny desk concert here. Thank you so much. That's beautiful.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Really beautiful. And we wish you so much luck on the road, and also, you know, be safe out there and keep spreading all that wonderful energy to the world.
Well, thank you so
much. And come back to the NAMM show.
I would love to. Yeah. And, you know, I also wanted to mention that as far as education, it's not specifically music education, but my wife and I started a college scholarship fund for young women in El Salvador. And so that's another piece that we've actually helped put four young women through college in El Salvador.
Beautiful.
That otherwise wouldn't have had the chance. And so that's also something people can find out about on
the website. We can find on your website.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for making the world a more musical and more beautiful place.
Well, thank you.
That's terrific.
Likewise. Thank you all so much for everything you do and for having me. I'm quite honored to be here.
Yes. So thank you so much for joining us here at Facebook Live for this wonderful time with Gina Chavez. We wish you the best. We'll be thinking of you out there on the road.
All right. Well, come see us.
Being an ambassador for all good things musical. And for all of you for joining us here at the NAMM show, and we hope you stay tuned for Talking at Music Education, a podcast of the NAMM Foundation.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAMM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community, or how you can be part of the work of the NAMM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAMM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAMM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.